Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. The news headlines on March the 22nd, 2019. It was a Friday. We all woke up to the news that there had been a horrific car accident on the Drumcondra Road in Dublin, and basically the north side of Dublin had been shut down. The car accident happened earlier that morning, but it was reported as follows. Great-granddad and young mum killed in horror head-on crash. A great-grandfather and a young mother have been killed in a horrific head-on crash. The victims named locally is John Pops Nulty, 72, and Rachel Coughlin, 34, died in the collision on Drumcondra Road Lower in Dublin at about 6:30 a.m. That morning. And then it went on to say, at this stage, investigators believe one of the vehicles crossed the road and collided with the other. Now, what emerged yesterday in the coroner's court nearly 2.5 years later is a very different story. If you take impressions from those headlines, it's a very different story. And the story that emerged was that John Pops Nulty, the man who's referred to as a great-granddad and his age given as 72, he was driving into the Mater Hospital from Balbriggan, where he lived. He was driving into the Mater Hospital, perfectly safe, his seatbelts on, his car in mechanical working order. He was driving in because he wanted to avoid the traffic, and apparently he was a stickler for punctuality and he didn't want to be late for his appointment. He was driving into the Mater Hospital at 5:30 in the morning. This should be the safest part of the day. And unfortunately, Rachel Coughlin, the young mother, as she's portrayed in the papers, her car crossed the road and crashed head on into John Nulty and killed him, and Rachel herself died in the crash. And yesterday in the coroner's court, it was made absolutely clear that John, the man who's referred to as a great-granddad, John Nulty, had absolutely no liability for this crash. It was totally caused, unfortunately, by Rachel Coughlin, who was 4 times over the drink driving limit, had alcohol in the car, had taken drugs, and indeed had a previous crash on her way up to the Drumcondra Road. And a taxi driver, who we don't know who it is, a taxi driver tried to stop her, tried to persuade her to stop, but instead she swung out onto the Drumcondra Road, off the Clonliffe Road, and swerved across the road and killed John Nulty. Now, Paula Weldon is John Nulty's daughter. Paula, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
First of all, condolences to you and indeed to Rachel Coughlin's family. It's an awful tragedy. Were you happy yesterday with the family? Did you get any comfort from the fact that what emerged is very different to what people were reading in the first few days, or indeed first few hours after this crash?
Yeah. We just feel like he was vindicated from any wrongdoing, yeah. You know, and yeah. We were quite happy that, like, it's after getting a good bit of media that he was in no way at fault. He was doing everything right. He was only on his way into the hospital for a simple procedure.
Yeah.
You know, so we just feel that we got a little bit of justice. Well, you couldn't even call it justice. But we got out what we needed to get out. Do you know what I mean?
That the story that emerged was not that a great-granddad, for whatever reason, which didn't happen, would lose concentration and veer over to the other side of the road. The true yeah. story is that the younger driver, less than half your dad's age, she was completely and totally at fault. Now, tell us a little bit about your dad. I know he's originally from Jarlett Road in Cabra, but a very popular man.
Yeah, he was extremely popular. As I said, he was from Carver, but I think everybody in Balbriggan knew him and loved him. Mm-hmm. He was a very funny and witty man, you know, okay. And a family man. Like, he was great dad, great grandfather, picked the kids up from school and the whole lot. He was just a good, very good man, very kind-hearted. You know, would do anything for anybody. And it's a senseless loss, you know.
And he was going into the Mater for a day procedure, was it?
Yeah, he had to get drops put in his eyes because he had a cataract problem.
Ah, okay.
So it was a simple thing he was travelling in for. And he left early that morning because he always left. His appointment wasn't until 9 o'clock, but he always left a little bit earlier to beat the traffic and get a parking and maybe a cup of tea, you know, before his appointment.
And he would have he would have known the matter well, being from Cabra as well. So he knew he knew his way in, and he knew what he. But he was going in early just to get himself ready and be comfortable and no hassle with the mad Dublin traffic. 2 or 3 hours later, when did the family discover about the tragedy?
Well, I think it was in around 9:45 that morning. My mother was in bed, and the guards arrived and were knocking on the door. So they couldn't really get her attention, but she woke up and she looked out the window and seen the car, the guard car, so she knew there was something wrong. So our liaison officer then explained to my mum what was after happening, and he then obviously went around. All of us were working that day. The whole family were in work, all of us. So he had to kind of drive around to all our workplaces and break the news. You know, my sister went with him.
What were you told about the accident at that stage?
Well, to be honest, when I was told, my knees just went, my legs just went from underneath me. And it wasn't really clear until, you know, the way you're kind of in shock and stuff. So it wasn't really made clear until I got up to my mother's house what had happened. And I was just told it was my father and another girl. And of course, first of all, I thought it was God loved the other girl as well.
Yeah,
like,
course,
we weren't really sure. We were thinking, oh, did he have a heart attack or, you know what I mean? So we weren't really made aware properly of what had happened. And then we heard little snippets of things, you know what I mean? But really yesterday was the day we found out everything.
And
stuff we already knew, but it was made more clear yesterday for us.
Well, I hope, because it was very, as you know, it was very big news at the time, because it was a head-on car crash on the Drumcondra Road there, just down from Fagan's pub, a big wide road. And it was said then, it is understood that one of the vehicles crossed the road and collided with the other. And as I say, the headline is great granddad and young mum killed in horror head on crash. So we all make presumptions from these headlines. But 2.5 years later, it's absolutely abundantly clear that your dad was a careful driver, had a seatbelt on, his airbags were working, his car was in good mechanical order, and he wasn't driving over the speed limit or anything like it. And he was a completely... Was he very conscious of safety on the road, Paula?
Yes, he was, always. You know what, he never had an accident. He loved his little car. It was in perfect nick, and my brother is a mechanic. So he used to keep up with the maintenance of the car, you know, very proud of his car. And always very safe on the road, very conscious. Like, I always said it about him, even before this tragic accident, that I felt very safe being in the car with him.
Okay.
You know?
And what did he, when he was working, what did he work at?
He used to do TV aerials and stuff like that. Yeah.
Not many, Paula, not many people these days remember TV aerials. Remember
exactly,
these?
I know. He did a bit of caretaking work then in primary school as well. So.
Oh, good man. Yeah. Oh,
he was great. He'd do anything for you.
And why was I know he's a great grand, but why was he called Pops?
That's just a name we gave him years and years ago. Like, I would never call him Dad or Da or whatever. It was always just Pop. Because we're such a big family as well, you know.
Now, what also emerged yesterday is that, unfortunately, Rachel Coughlin had crashed into another car a few minutes previously. And a taxi driver, who's only named Jerry, he pleaded with her to stop, to get out of the car, and he said she was incoherent, and unfortunately she didn't heed him. Have you met that taxi driver?
Yeah, we actually met him briefly yesterday.
Oh, very good.
We kind of shook his hand and thanked him for everything he did try to do, you know, because it must be very awful on him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To think, could I have done something else? But he did all he could try and stop her. She was just speeding off, do you know what I mean? So... I feel very sorry for him. I feel very sorry for all the witnesses, do you know what I mean, that came across it and have to deal with that now and, you know.
And people will remember the photographs from the crash.
Yeah.
It was a Volkswagen Passat that Rachel was in, and your dad was in a silver Suzuki. But the two cars were destroyed. They were absolutely destroyed. Absolutely destroyed. But what were your father's hobbies in life, apart from his children and his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren?
He loved the game of pitch and putt.
Ah.
Yeah. Loved pitch and putt and that, you know.
Yeah.
But, Yeah, just the real kind of today. But we are, the family are all kind of relieved that now he's been vindicated and he had no wrongdoing.
Yeah.
And as I said, if it stops even one person getting into a car and drink driving or drugs, that his death won't have been in vain, if you know what I mean.
And how
that's the message.
Paula, how did you find the actual inquest itself? Did you have to look at CCTV and photographs?
No, just a few photographs, like photographs that we had already seen in the papers, you know, at the beginning. So, yeah, it was tough, but we were prepared before that for what was going to happen.
Because apparently the Gardaí did a very good job. They tracked down a lot of CCTV.
They were absolutely brilliant, and I have to put that out there as well. They left no stone unturned, and they did a brilliant investigation.
Yeah.
You know, they were absolutely amazing, the Gardaí.
So the family won, and rightly so, want to get across the true story of what happened, even though it's a tragedy that both these people are dead. A tragedy, an absolute tragedy. But the impression that was given at the time, probably inadvertently, but the impression given at the time is completely untrue. And as your father was completely and totally an innocent victim here in many ways, going about his daily life, going into the hospital for a procedure, going in early to make sure he got a parking space and the chaotic roads around the Mater Hospital. And he was a total innocent victim. And I know the family want to plead with people. And again, we're coming to a weekend about drink driving.
This is why I initially came on to, I said I'd come on to try and get the message out about the drink driving thing, you know, and to stop other people and think before you actually get into a car. It doesn't matter whether you've only one drink.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do it. You know, like as I said, there's my father's death's a perfect example of why you shouldn't go out drink driving. Like, he was an innocent man. And as a result of that, we're after losing him, you know.
Before his time too, he was in good health.
Yeah.
And the coroner said, I intend to record a verdict in the case of Mr. Nulty of misadventure. And I want to emphasise that misadventure isn't arising from his driving, his conduct, his actions or his decisions. That's on the record. So I hope the family get some comfort from that. But that's just a grain of sand compared to the tragedy of the loss of John Pops Nulty, as he was so well known and so well loved with anyone. And I could see the text coming in there, people he helped and people in the school he worked in saying he was just a joy to work with.
So all I can say about him is he was just the most amazing man. I can't say anything more than that. Like, even his funeral, I've never seen a funeral that big in my life, ever.
Yeah.
You know, and it just goes to show how many people loved him and how much he was taught of. You know,
so he's not just a road traffic statistic anymore. He is a man.
He was a person.
A
good person, a very good person. You know, and he's also leaving a huge family behind him, and every one of us and all of his grandkids are all devastated. Still are devastated, you know, and we just have to try and maybe we can move on a little bit now and grieve a little bit better, because the weight of the inquest and the toss of it even kind of was keeping us back from moving on and celebrating his life.
And was any of Rachel's family in court yesterday or at the inquest?
No, her inquest was separate.
Okay.
Thank God we didn't have to face anybody, you know, we didn't have to face her family.
Have you heard anything from them or?
No.
Yeah, okay. No. They're grieving as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, we don't really. And we're more concentrated on pop.
Of course,
you know what I mean? Like, more side of things are nothing to.
Of course you were.
Yeah.
And that taxi driver, fairness to him, he came forward as well immediately to the Gardaí. So he would have managed to get the story changed pretty quickly into the fact that this woman was driving very, very dangerously only a couple of minutes previously to killing your dad. in that car crash. Anyway, Paula Weldon Nolte, thank you so much, and condolences to your mother, to all your family on the loss of what was a great man, John Pops Nolte, and let him be remembered as he was, and let the verdict and the record show that he was a totally innocent victim that Friday morning, driving in about his business perfectly safely. So may he rest in peace, and also may Rachel Coughlin rest in peace as well. Paula, thanks so much, and kind regards to you and your great family. Thanks, Paula.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Apparently, the Gardaí are saying there's a new spate of robberies happening, and it's people who are going into banks to withdraw cash and are being watched and followed. And that's what's happened. James has just contacted us. James, good afternoon. Where did it happen and when?
Hi, Joe. How you keeping? It was on Tuesday. I went into Ulster Bank there, just at the Coachman's, near the airport.
Okay.
I obviously did a foolish thing. I withdrew a significant amount of money. It's my bonus money, I guess, for my job, right?
Okay.
And I was putting into. I had lads that did work in my garden. A fair bit of work, so I was taking out to pay them.
Okay.
So I took it out, put it into an envelope. Obviously, it was quite big, so I couldn't put it into my pocket or my trousers. Came straight out of the bank, into my car, locked the car, put it in my glove box, and headed back to work. I work in the airport.
So
what I didn't realise was there was a guy watching all the time, and he followed me back to work. And then when I got back to work, I obviously came into my car park, and that was it. Locked the car, went into my job, and unfortunately, when I came back out of my job, about 2 hours later, at about, I don't know, 5:45, one of the windows was smashed, and then it triggered at me about 20 seconds later. Oh, no, I thought, and I looked in the glove box, and the money was gone, right? And now, obviously, everything in hindsight, I should have, you know, just did bank transfer, and I should have done that, but it is what it is, right? And I suppose I'm ringing the radio because I'd hate to see someone to say, you know, old, elderly or so on, the same thing happened to them, you know? So I'd sort of encourage
any,
people.
Any CCTV?
There is, yeah. And I got a lovely guard from Santry, and he's on the case, right? But we'll see what happens, you know? But it's, that's just the way it goes. You
and
know?
I reckon, so do you reckon it was a he, by the way, from the CCTV?
It appeared to be. It looks as though it was a person just sitting there. I don't know how long he was sitting there now. And literally just obviously staring at everybody coming out, right? And in all honesty, he saw me, and he saw a bit of a white envelope and took a gamble, right? Now, I suppose what I don't know, if I had went home as opposed to going back to work, I suppose there's a chance he probably would have followed me back home, you know.
And are you even more worried at that prospect?
Well, I suppose you would be, because if you bring money into your house, is somebody going to follow you into your house, right?
Would he say to himself, well, I'm this close to it, I might as well go and get it?
I might as well go to get it. It's obviously opportunistic, you know. It's somebody watching, you know, anybody coming out of the bank with if you want to say, a white envelope. You know, so I would just encourage people not to make the mistake.
And is it the fact that it was in cash and it was 3,000? Is that anyway covered by even the car insurance?
No, I don't think so. I had a window fixed today, now that obviously is covered.
Yeah.
But you know, so it's a bad day, basically.
Did the Gardaí say this is happening a fair bit? Or
yeah, they have said the Gardaí have said yes, they've definitely heard of it.
And how long between you walking out of the bank with this money in the envelope, and it was obviously cash, and this guy, as far as you know, smashing the window and grabbing it?
So basically, I came out of the bank at 2:30.
Yeah.
I got back to my office at about 2:40. And within 3 minutes of when I locked the car, went into the office, he was parked a few down from me, came out of the car park, went around, reversed in. Yeah, so about 3 minutes, so it wasn't beating around forever.
And did your car alarm go off when the window?
It didn't. I was actually just speaking to somebody on that because it's a new enough car, and I have a feeling it's only an immobilizer on this car, which I was surprised by, to be honest with you.
It didn't have an alarm.
It didn't have an alarm. I'm surprised by that. I need to.
You say it's a relatively new car and it didn't have an alarm, but it had an immobilizer, so it couldn't have been stolen.
Yeah, it would appear that it has an immobilizer, because I would have thought the alarm should have went off, but there's obviously no alarm on it, just an immobilizer,
That's an interesting find, an interesting question for people to ask as well. Yeah. James, I'm sorry about the 3,000. It's an awful lot of money, lot of money, and hopefully the guards and Santry will reach a conclusion and get the money back, but... best wishes indeed to you and your family. That's James. Talking about alarms, what about smoke alarms? Jason, good afternoon. Hello, Jason. Is Jason there? No, is Geraldine there?
Hello?
Geraldine, how are you? I'm waiting on Jason on the other line because it was Jason who heard the smoke alarm in your house.
Yes.
And you tell us what happened from inside your house.
Well, I don't really... all I know... Before it started in my sitting room.
Okay.
Now, I was in a very high flat.
Okay.
I mean, you opened my hall door, you had these big stairs up.
Okay.
And I would have no other way of getting out.
Okay. But where were you when the fire... Were you asleep?
I had laid down on my sofa.
Yeah.
And the whole sitting room was going on fire, basically.
Okay, stay there, which we know by your voice that it ended happily, so that's good. But Jason is now there. Jason, where were you when you heard Geraldine's smoke alarm?
I was out the back, Joe. I was out the back garden, and I could hear the alarm going off for 20, 30 minutes.
Okay.
And I tried to shout up toward and knock at the front door, but I couldn't get an answer. Then I came back down, I was out the garden, and then that's when I noticed the smoke coming out of the window. So I had to run back down to the house. I jumped up onto the porch, and I was able to get the window open.
Well done.
And kind of scream into J3, director towards the stairs, and down the stairs, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the heat and the smoke, I was overwhelmed with the smoke, and I couldn't actually put my head in. I could just shout to her. Well, eventually we got her out the door, do you know what I mean? But if I hadn't noticed that smoke...
And initially, Jason, when you heard the smoke alarm and you didn't see smoke, did you think it was, you know, someone burning toast in the kitchen?
Yeah, that's initially what I thought, really, because... Mm-hmm. At first, I didn't give any concern, really. But then it was going on for 20 minutes. That's when I went out and kind of shouted up.
Yeah.
I got no answer. And it was still going off, so I said to myself, that's not right. I noticed the smoke, so that's when
Well done.
Jumped up onto the thing, called the fire brigade.
Now, is Geraldine's sitting room, it's upstairs rather than downstairs. Is that what you're saying, where she was?
Yeah, it's
the way they're...
It's kind of like a duplex building. Yeah. She lives upstairs.
Yeah.
And there's only one way in and out of her house. There's no actual back door. Do you know what I mean? So she's very, very lucky, honestly.
She sure is. Very, very lucky. You were in the garden that last Sunday afternoon. Geraldine, and how come you didn't hear the smoke alarm? There is an issue, and we've dealt with it before. There is a... an Irish forensic scientist based in Scotland who has issues with the frequency of the smoke alarms. When you woke up, was it the smoke alarm that woke you up or the smoke?
No, it was Jay's voice woke me up.
Wow.
It was Jay's voice because I had took a, I my doctor put me on the Xanax.
Okay.
I had a little relaxer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And my sister was after coming down.
Right.
And my other friend had been up with me.
Okay.
And when they left, I took me little relaxer and I put my head down on the sofa.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was raped down there a few months ago. Okay. And
oh God. Yeah, yeah.
No idea.
Okay, but it's awful, Geraldine. Did you hear Jason shouting, Geraldine, Jer?
Well, I don't know how long Jason was saying Jer for.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, I heard Jay's voice.
Yeah.
And he screamed at me to try to get at the stairs.
Okay.
And when I got to the stairs, he grabbed me and he got me out.
Well done.
But I couldn't see my way out.
Wow.
I could not see my way out.
Because she was lying down and the smoke obviously gathered up around her.
Of course, yeah.
And when I woke her up, that's when she stood up.
That's when you get to hit
the
smoke.
But she must have been inhaling a lot of smoke because her nose and her mouth was fully black.
Good God.
So I think the smoke kind of overcame her a little bit as well. Do you know what I mean?
So did you actually manage to get into the house, Jason?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like, eventually I did, yeah.
And Geraldine managed to find the stairs and get down the stairs and out to
safety. Yeah, well, I was just screaming at her to get on the ground.
Good lad.
To stay on the ground, do you know what I mean? Then she could see the light. And then a fella got the door open, so we just rushed in and grabbed her, pulled her out downstairs and got her out.
Well done, well done. Geraldine, what do you want to say to Jason?
I thank him for saving my life.
Yeah.
I want to thank Jason for saving my life. And he knows that I've gone through hell and back down there.
Okay. Is your house is damaged? It's not livable.
Oh, it's gutted.
It's gutted, is it? Okay.
I ended up with nothing. Only clothes I had on me. Yeah. That's all I ended up with.
Okay. And I'm looking at the photographs in the Echo, who reported the story. It's an awful situation. And then the fire brigade arrived, Jason.
The fire brigade, yeah, they arrived. They were very good. They were very efficient, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Pumped the fire.
Have you ever, Jason, have you ever rescued anyone before?
No, not in that situation, okay. No.
Well, you're only a young man anyway. But well done. Well done on all that thinking, Jason, about get on the floor. That's the smoke is... The smoke is awful, but the smoke is much worse the higher up you, even when you're standing. So lie on the floor, plan your escape, try and remember what stairs or where this. I know it's hard for people, especially if there's a panic on.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems. I was trying to direct her out, do you know what I mean? But she just had no, obviously, waking up. She was disorientated.
Yeah.
So I just urge people to... Look out for neighbours, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
don't take things like that for granted, because only for I did check that.
Yeah.
Like, Geraldine wouldn't be alive.
Yeah. And get a smoke. It's great, Geraldine, that you had a smoke alarm, by the way, and you had it working and everything. That's great. And reminder to people to get, there's cheapest chips now in hardwares and super. Get a smoke alarm. Get two smoke alarms, in fact. And if not more, and test them once a week. Jason, well done, and congratulations on keeping your wits about you. And Geraldine, you mind yourself. I hope Jason saving your life.
He did 100%.
And hopefully that might mark a turn for the better in your fortunes at the minute. So look after yourself, Geraldine. Look after yourself.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Thank you both.
Bye.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Back to the story at the horrific story at the top of the story. John Pops Nulty killed by a drunk driver. John, another John here. John, your story, please.
Joe, hi, how are you?
Oh, good, thanks.
Yeah, basically, I just want to just comment there to say that there's not enough punishment or fines on an issue on drunk drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I was hit by a drunk driver 2 years ago while I was stationary, parked up, waiting for my two kids to come out of school.
Okay.
I had my 2-year-old daughter in the back of the car.
Right. And what time of day was it?
This was 1:30 in the afternoon, Joe.
A drunk driver at 1:30?
He was 2.5 times over the limit. So he hit me and then left the scene, hit another car before he was eventually caught by the guards. And he got away with a 2-year ban. That was it.
And was he off the road for 2 years?
Well, he's back on the road now in next month.
Okay.
So as far as I know, he's been off the road. But I just think that's, you know, there's not enough punishment in the country for...
And did,
for
the man, and did the man admit he had a drink problem?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And by the way, if he... You were parked?
I was parked, yeah.
Hopefully the children hadn't come out at that stage, had they?
They hadn't, Joe. About another 15, 20 minutes, there would have been about 100 children crossing the road.
And did you meet this chap in court?
I didn't. I was never told of when the court case was going to be. So I didn't know the date or anything until I read it in the paper about a week later.
And did you ever see a photograph of him?
Oh, I know who he is. He lives in my town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's often what you're dependent on with drunk drivers. You're dependent on people knowing that this guy is off the road, rightly so, for 2 years, because, and he's a danger. And
yeah.
if he does go on the road, well, then people might ring the local Garda station and say, he's on a ban, but I saw him driving. And we need that vigilance as well.
Yeah,
we need that
so.
Vigilance.
Yeah.
Okay, John, were you injured in the...
Luckily, very minor injuries, Joe. A couple of scrapes and bruises and stuff, but nothing major.
Okay.
And my daughter was fine as well.
Okay,
so.
Another reminder.
Yeah.
Thanks indeed,
listen,
John.
Thanks very much, Joe.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
It is sending convulsions through every aspect of British society at the moment, and that is the brutal murder of Sarah Everard by this policeman called Wayne Cousins. He's going to spend the rest of his living life in prison, no ifs or buts. But on March the 3rd, he stopped, just obviously in the middle of COVID, but he stopped Sarah as she was going about her journey home, and he produced his ID card and arrested her for, he said, breaching COVID rules, nonsense, and then put her into the back of what was a hired car, handcuffed, and then committed the most vile acts on Sarah, both when she was alive and when she died. And there's calls now for Cressida Dick, who's the Metropolitan London Police, or calls, I think I saw her this morning, on five front pages of UK newspapers, and all five of them are looking for her resignation, because this man apparently had come to the attention of his colleagues beforehand when he was a policeman for indecent exposure. And also now there's an investigation going on about his WhatsApp group that he was a member of with other Metropolitan Police officers that were exchanging pornographic material. So, as I say, ramifications. Every British, James O'Brien on LBC was talking about it this morning, and they were talking about it from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock on BBC Radio Today programme. Yesterday on the Today programme in full, which is unusual for them, they voiced the impact statements, the victim impact statements of Sarah's parents, and they were extraordinarily moving. And at one stage they looked across at Wayne Cousins and they asked him to look at them, and so they could get across to him the impact and the devastation they had brought, or he had brought, into their lives. But as I say, he's now beginning a whole life sentence. Now, this has raised the issue of women and women's safety again and again and again. And there's a powerful piece in today's Examiner by Shauna Bowers, who's also a journalist. But in this case, Shauna is telling us about her own incidents with men and strangers. Shauna Bauer. Shauna, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Oh, good. Tell us, you say, first of all, an incident when you were 13.
Yes. So I was 13 and I was returning home from the local shopping centre with two kind of popular girls. So I was really excited that they had asked me to go out with them that day. And it's about 7:30 on a Saturday in October. And I was disembarking from a bus. The bus stop is about 2 minutes away from my home when a silver car kind of pulled up to the road that I had to walk up to get to my home.
Okay.
And there were two men in the front seats. And they started kind of shouting compliments, I suppose, for lack of a better term, at me. You know, hello, lovely, you look gorgeous, and I kind of just smiled and nodded and acknowledged them, but didn't respond verbally. And as I moved to go past the car, the man in the passenger seat, he reached out of the roll-down window and grabbed my arm and tried to pull me in through the open window. Thankfully, like, I'm honestly not really sure how I managed to break free of his grasp because it was quite tight, but it was obviously adrenaline or the fight or flight reaction kind of kicking in, and I did manage to break free and ran home to my parents. We reported the incident to Gardaí.
And did anything come? Were anyone apprehended?
No. So the Gardaí attended my home that night, and I told them the story, and then several days later, I went into the station to make a formal statement on the matter, and there was, like, they did take me seriously, but my dad, I remember, was talking to a female Gardaí who was looking into the case for me, and he was asking if they had any leads or any suspects, and she turned around and said, oh, it was probably just two lads having a laugh.
That doesn't sound like two lads having a laugh. Do you think it was two lads having a laugh, Shauna?
No, and don't. Those words have actually stuck with me ever since, because I couldn't comprehend how someone could view something that was so petrifying to me as just a random Saturday night activity. She made it sound as if I should be relieved that they didn't actively go out to abduct me, that it was just a spur-of-the-moment idea. But
two lads half-acting the Egypt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the impact it had on you, you're only 13, I'll remind listeners.
Yeah, so I remember going into school the weeks after and I was very, very tired. I was mad about school at the time. I just really enjoyed it. And my teachers were like, oh, you're not yourself, you're very quiet. I was very jumpy. Anytime anyone kind of said my name, you'd see a visible reaction and things like that. So yeah, it did have an impact on me.
And sleep, and were you able to go to school? And
I did go to school, and in fairness, the school were very, very supportive. My year head put me in touch with the local school counsellor, and I remember telling her the story, and I was explaining over and over again. I was like, it was only 7:30, and it was still kind of bright out, and there were lights. And she stopped me, and she was like, why are you saying that as if you've done something wrong? Like, you're entitled to see your friends and things like that. So it was kind of only in hindsight that I realised that I was almost blaming myself for the situation, which is obviously baffling, but that's just how I interpreted it.
And how did you feel you were blaming yourself, Shauna? Because that's a fascinating insight.
I think society kind of indoctrinates things into young women, and it's not conscious, like my parents or family have never said anything like that, but it's like we feel like it's our responsibility to keep ourselves safe, and we have to have our keys at the ready to get straight into their house, and we need to text our friends so they know that we're home safe, and we need to scan our surroundings to make sure that there's no one following us and things like that. So as opposed to, we should be teaching others not to abduct or to attack or anything like that, it's as if we're treating women particularly to protect themselves, as if the duty is on us.
Yeah. And Shauna, the effect on your parents, what, obviously they were vigilant anyway, but they must have been either perplexed and extra vigilant about this incident because they believed you.
Yeah, my mum and I would be quite close, and I remember when I returned home, I couldn't actually, like, when the incident happened, I couldn't formulate the words, they just wouldn't come out. And she knew straight away from my reaction because I was shaking, and she was like, oh, what happened? And then for kind of weeks and months after, she was very nervous about me, you know, going out with friends, naturally, because she didn't want to repeat. But then she also didn't want to punish me for the actions of others either, so she didn't want to stop me from doing the things I enjoyed. So it was kind of this compromise constantly between your fears and anxieties and what someone should be entitled to do.
And as you know from your own work, the Sarah Everard case has rocked British society to its core in terms of safety for women, long before the case terminated yesterday with the life sentence. There was protests and women coming together, but also the other aspect of that case was that it was a serving policeman. He did, now the police minister in the UK He says it's the biggest shock to hit, and in terms of confidence in the British police, in a very, very, very long time. And Seana, stay with us, please, because I want to bring in Katrina McMahon. And Katrina, what happened? This is an awful story, and it's really sinister and serious implications. Katrina is in Limerick. Katrina McMahon, go ahead, Katrina.
Hi, Joe. Thanks a million. And first of all, can I just say to Seana as well, thanks a million for sharing your story. You know, it's very important. I suppose my story, it ties in with the whole, I suppose, the police force and the Gardaí and what happened to me. It's quite a few years ago now. But I suppose, a long story short, you know, I always would have been the type of person that if I had something on my mind, I'd go for a walk or, you know, go towards the beach. So this particular evening, I had gone for a walk on a local beach. And as I was, say, I left the beach and I was walking up towards the town, I noticed a male that was at the boot of his car. And initially, do you know when something in your gut just says, oh God, this feels a bit weird? So I was walking past anyway, and it just felt very uncomfortable. He never said anything, that was fine. So I just felt so uneasy. I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back to my car now and leave. So I just up the road a little bit, turned around and came back. And when I was coming back, he was in full jogging attire. And he had the back door of the car open, which to me, it made me very unnerved for a start, you know, when you're facing an open door. But he was also stretching in the way of the door. And he just said, hi, how are you, or something. And I goes, hi, and just walked past. So I got into my car, locked the door, and I was pulling out of that town. Say I had driven maybe 2 or 3 minutes, maybe 5. And my phone started beeping non-stop. So I was like, God, I better pull in and check it. So I pulled in and check it, and the message on the phone said basically, hi, how are you keeping, or whatever like that. So I wrote back and said, sorry, I don't know this number. I've no idea who this is. And the person wrote back and said, oh, I saw you out the other night in such a place. And I knew I hadn't been out, because I would have been pretty serious to training at that time. So I knew this wasn't for me at all, or it was someone messing. So I said, look, I'm sorry, you're the wrong person. They were back saying, no, it's you. And I was like, okay, well, look, not messaging back anymore, this is it. You know? So anyway, for finish, I said, look, unless you tell me the truth, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Okay. So he wrote back, and it transpired that I think he was so desperate to talk to me, he kind of gave up what was going on. He said he was a guard. And that when he saw me walking at the beach, that he rang a fellow guard in a station and traced my car registration number. And then got my mobile number from that.
Now, that's what he said. We've no evidence it's true, but apart from what he told you.
Exactly.
But it's very worrying if it is true.
It's terrifying. And for me to rely
on
that.
It's illegal.
It's all completely illegal. And you know what? I didn't realise how easy it is for that information. Like, it never dawned on me. Because initially I was thinking, how did this fella get my number? I mean, he said, I ran your car registration plate. I had to sit on that. I came home and I remember sitting down at, you know, my family home, and I was thinking, what am I going to do here? And you know what I did was, I actually wrote back and I said, it's like this now. You can either stop messaging me now or you can continue and I will report you. It's completely unacceptable. It's disgusting. It shouldn't have happened. Forget about it. Now, thankfully, he did stop. But, I mean, there was two guardian that was definitely, well, that's what he said, but there was two that played a role in that, you know, two people. One had to look up the number, and himself, who was down by the beach.
And was his number evident to you on your phone?
At the time, I think it was, yeah. At the time, I think it was. But, I mean, that's, like, it didn't go any further.
And obviously, you were scared. Were you tempted to go to a guard station, or were you, in the back of your mind, you're saying, hang on a minute, this guy is telling me he is a guard. This guy is telling me, and he sounds, from what you say, he sounds convincing enough. He said when he saw me and he saw my card, he rang one of his buddies and said, run that through the pulse system, tell me who it is, and is there any address or phone number attached to it?
That's exactly it. And you know what, you have the fear then, if you do say that, like, realistically, you're going to be brought in for a fellow guards, possibly. You know, and I had that fear of that, so I ended up just being like, once he didn't contact me anymore, okay, that's it.
Okay.
But it's still to this day sticks to my mind, you know, how easy it happened.
Okay. Sean, to this day, how has that awful incident impacted on you?
Oh, it was 10 years ago now, so I think for the most part I have recovered, for lack of a better term. But I think women, all women, whether they've had a similar experience or not, are very conscious when they are out walking, whether it's bright out or not. So I always text my friends if we're walking home to let them know I got home safe, and like we always share locations on WhatsApp and things like that. So it has shaped my reaction, I think, but it no longer haunts me in the way it once did.
Yeah. And I just think it'd be very instructive for people, everybody, to, if you could, go on to... it's a website called judiciary.uk where they publish the deliberations, the statements by judges as they were the sentencing remarks, I suppose, the best way to describe it. And Judge L.J. Fulford of the Central Criminal Court, his sentencing remarks about Wayne Cousins are there, and he goes through the evil litany that this man went through, and it is a... Now there's calls in the UK. People are saying that if I'm stopped by a lone police officer saying he or she is a police officer, I'm not going to heed them. And people are saying, well, phoning in with stories, especially black men in the UK saying, if I was stopped by a lone police officer and I didn't believe them, I'd be immediately arrested and accused of resisting arrest. But the long, long sentencing remarks of that judge are well worth, it's 9 pages, are well worth reading to bring across the horror of it, to the complete and total innocence of everything that Sarah did. And I'm reminded of that insight that Shauna had when she was recounting what happened to her. She was conscious, hang on a minute, I better make sure I say to them I was wearing bright clothes and all this. In other words, that it wasn't, I had nothing to do with it, which you shouldn't have to, that should not be done. Okay, Shauna Bowers, thanks indeed. You can read the full article in today's Examiner. Katrina McMahon in Limerick, with a very sinister tale. Thanks indeed for telling your story, Katrina. And back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Stephanie Martin, good afternoon, Stephanie.
Good afternoon to you.
Okay, and there will be a delay, so I'll throw in a few questions first, because you are in Pennsylvania, but you were recently in Ireland, and it's a sad story that generated an interesting and hopefully uplifting episode for you and your family. Your mother, unfortunately, was diagnosed in 2017 with dementia, which was brought on by abuse, repeated injuries to her head. But she came up with a bucket list, and one of those was to come to Ireland. Tell us about the bucket list and your mother's connections to Ireland, and then your trip to Ireland.
Absolutely. So I guess on her bucket list, she'd always wanted to see Ireland because her family was from Ireland. Her great-grandfather, they were O'Donnells.
Okay.
And he obviously came over, and on, you know, during the potato famine or whatever that was, to Ellis Island. And she always wanted to go there. So that was kind of the thing. We made up a little bit of a bucket list, and she said, I want to go see the Cliffs of Moher. So we were able to travel there and see it, and it was a beautiful experience with her. We got to spend 10 days in Ireland and kind of just travel the countryside and see everything that you guys have to offer. And needless to say, she was in awe when she got to see those cliffs.
And what specifically were the Cliffs of Moher her highlight, and why?
I would just say just because of the simple fact that, you know, it is like a majestic, it's not one of the seven wonders of the world, obviously, but they're just beautiful, they're majestic.
And how is your mom now after the trip?
She's doing good. I think I'm going to try to find the time before, you know, we only have so much limited time with her before, you know, it's all her memories gone, unfortunately. But I would love to take her maybe one more time. I might be able to sit in one more before she forgets everything.
And Stephanie, did she try or actually track down any now or ever track down any relatives in Ireland, any O'Donnells?
Well, we were actually able to visit the town of Ennistimon or Ennistimon. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You have it right.
Okay, Ennistimon, and we were able to go there, which is really neat. We weren't able to track down any relatives, but we were able to at least visit the town and see to see where her great-grandfather lived.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's lovely. And your mother was born in the States, was she?
Yes, yep. Okay. Yep, she was born in Delaware.
And do we know what brought on her dementia?
Yeah, unfortunately, she suffered from a lot of trauma as a child. And oftentimes, football players, you'll see football players that have a lot of repeated hits to the head will get this. And unfortunately, she suffered from a lot of trauma as a child, and it had a lot of hits to the head, which was brought on, the frontotemporal dementia.
Oh, God. And on her bucket list, was it all about Ireland, or did she have other items on her bucket list?
It was all about Ireland, think I might bring her one more time. But maybe I'll get a couple. I've been able to take her to a few other places as well, too. But Ireland was the big one, probably just because the simple fact that her family's from there.
Okay. Stephanie, we wish her well, and hopefully your dream now of a second trip to Ireland will come true as well. And well done for you for organising it. That would have taken a lot of work and a lot of effort. And to the O'Donnells, of Ennistimon in County Clare, we say hello to those who might be related to your mother, Susan. Thanks indeed. That's Stephanie Martin in Pennsylvania, the United States of America, talking about her wonderful mother, Susan Shattuck, is her name at the moment. Let me go to Anne Breen. Anne, the story of James earlier on, the cash coming out of a financial institution. What happened in your case?
I was I'm in Newbridge, and I was in the credit union. I drew out €1,000, and it was raining. And when I got it in a white envelope, and I walked out a couple of steps up, there's a pharmacist, and I went in there to pick up a few small items.
Okay.
And the Dutch girl was serving me. The girl was serving me, and then this other girl came flying in onto the right of me, and she was shouting at the pharmacist, kind of asking her, where do you get the Angelin tested, and shouting at her, and she was distracting her, and I was looking at her, and I could feel slightly someone on my other side, but I kind of wasn't, and my bag was opened where I had my purse in my hand paying the girl for items I got, but the other girl on my right kept shouting. Of course, we were all looking at her and looking at her. Anyway, she was looking for where would she get them, and she was telling her in the white wall, where's that shouting?
Okay.
She had a mask on her, and now I didn't see the other person on my left, but I left her, and I went home, and the minute I put my bag, envelope was gone, and she went straight away, and I rang them back to check the footage, and they said, yeah, they could see it instantly. Where the other girl, one girl was shouting, and the other girl...
Distracting,
took the money out of me, the white envelope out of my bag.
CCTV... footage.
Yeah, the CT footage showed it as clear as anything, yeah.
And are they clear? Are their faces clear?
No, they're masks on them.
Oh, they're masks, okay.
Yeah.
These COVID masks are balaclavas. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. But, I just said I'd ring in just to make people aware of it and that, you know, that it's not just happening in Dublin, it's happening here and everywhere, you know. People are being followed.
And the Gardaí asked, would you submit the, would you allow the footage to go forward?
Yeah.
And you did?
I have permission for that.
Has that been broadcast yet?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, but be careful. As you say, two so-called customers, one distracting while the other is dipping into your bag.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Anne, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks indeed, Anne Breen.
Bye.
Back to the issues raised by the Sarah Everard murder in the UK. Ruth Walsh. Ruth, good afternoon. You were coming out of a pub on New Year's Eve.
I was indeed, Joe. It was quite a while ago now. And I'm no youngster, but I was dressed in waterproof from head to toe because it was a cold New Year's Eve. And somebody, this isn't a stole, passed a crack at the other side. Oh, there'll be a baby conceived tonight in Church Street. And I said, nothing passed on. Now, let me say, I don't think that it was going to be any more than that. But I still think he demonstrated a basic attitude that I, as a woman, should not be out on my own at night. And it enraged me from that point of view that, like, I shouldn't be walking down the street at 2 a.m, whatever.
What an awful thing to say.
It was very, I thought, very sharp. This was obviously one bright guy who came out with this remark, knowing, you know, like the consequences of this could be, you know. And it was a quip. He didn't make any attempt to come near me, but he was reinforcing the notion that a woman on their own should not be on her own.
Well,
and that's really what I wanted to say.
Well articulated, Ruth. Well said now.
Can I go back to Sarah Erivard?
Yeah,
it deeply disturbs me, Joe. I mean, first of all, I can't look at her face, but I'm thinking, what a beautiful young woman she was. I mean, in this real sense of the word, beautiful expression. You'd know this was just a very, very lovely, lovely young woman. But aside from that, this man, they used to joke in the thing that they used to joke, and you call him the rapist. So they saw something peculiar in him. And the fact that they didn't follow through on the vetting, they didn't do it properly because he had been exposing himself. So there were question marks about him. And then when the women met for the vigil after her death, the police were very heavy-handed. Yeah,
very heavy-handed.
Vigil.
And the police made little effort at that. It was a Saturday evening, that outpouring of pain and sympathy and grief, primarily by women, but there was men there as well.
Yeah.
And the police, even though the London Police Commissioner is a woman, whether that makes a difference, the police made no effort to liaise with the women, and they just took it as a breach of COVID regulations, and a near riot ensued. A near riot ensued from people who were just there.
I can see they threw one woman to the ground and handcuffed her, and the look on her face. I'm really shocked by their callousness, and they're now they're sickened because it's one of their own, but there's something missing in their attitude. There's something fundamentally wrong if they feel a group of women turning up to say how upset they are is not given the same status as their horror at having one of their you know, comrades or colleagues doing what he did. They should have seen it as being exactly the same kind of outpouring.
Yeah. Stay with us, Ruth. Ruth Walsh, Joe at RT.ie. Eugene John O'Reilly, who's a retired Garda, has contacted us. Eugene, you're listening to the story, and you say you have three daughters. What advice do you give them?
Hi, Joe. And I'd like to just say that I agree with what that lady says about the police's attitude toward the march, and they should have shown far more restraint.
Yeah.
And they should have had empathy with the women.
They should have facilitated it rather than.
Well, yes, yeah, absolutely. We police by consent, and that's the bottom line, you know. And as far as I'm concerned, that my advice to my daughters always has been: if you're in any doubt, ring 999 straight away. And that means that it's on record. When you get through to the 999, everything is recorded.
Okay,
so,
great, yeah.
You and that young lady who was approached by this fellow who said he was a guard. Now, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't.
Yeah,
but
of course, we don't know that.
My advice is take a photograph of the registration of the car. And when you get into your car, ring 999 and say, this number, this guy in this car number has approached me and said to me that he's a guard and that he has gotten... And if he was a guard and he got another guard to get that information from those two members should be disciplined severely.
Absolutely. But is it possible, if I'm a guard, is it possible when I go onto the Pulse system and I log in a reg number, what information comes up?
Well, you know, I'll give you an example. I lost my wallet recently. I was out walking and I lost my wallet up at Brayhead. And a very nice young girl found it.
Okay.
She happened to be a Garda.
Okay.
And she looked into my wallet and my government services card was in it.
Okay.
Right? Now, she was able to give that information back to the station.
Right.
And the station were able to tell her what my telephone number was.
Okay.
There would be telephone.
That was legitimate work there, but there would be telephone numbers on the Pulse system.
Of course, yeah. If you interact with the Pulse system at all, you're asked lots of different questions. If you become a victim of a crime, if you're involved in a traffic accident, all that information is put into the system.
Okay. If a superior went into that reg number later on, would it show that I had logged into it? Do you follow
me? Absolutely, yeah. There's a log of every guard that checks any number.
And is there random checks on that? Is there random oversight that a guard, the internal affairs and the guards or whatever would pick out?
I don't know that, Joe, because...
And like, say, why did you access this number?
You'd be talking about thousands of inquiries.
Yeah.
And it'd be very difficult to
pick most of them obviously are legitimate.
Well, you know, look, I was in the traffic division for 20 years. I stopped so many people on the road, decent people. You'd stop them, you'd have to check the text and the insurance and the whole lot. And all that is recorded. Every single bit of that is recorded. Now, if they were to go into my log for the time that I spent there, they'd spend months and months
going through the whole lot of it.
Because of the nature of your work. Absolutely, and I think what we're talking about here, Joe, is making people safe, and especially young girls and women. And you know, the unfortunate part about it is, and I don't know whether this is a statistic or not, but from my own work down through the years in the guards, we have about 95% of the people in the country who are decent, hardworking.
You probably have
about 5% of people who are not, and they're the ones that commit the crimes, and they can be in any walk of life. It doesn't make any difference from the top to the bottom, as we have seen. And unfortunately, they're in the police, they're in the judiciary, they're in the medical profession, they're in every profession.
When you were on duty on the road, and obviously you were doing it for many years and a pretty busy job as well, I suspect. Like, would you ever get a woman who's afraid to roll down the window?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
How would you proceed?
Well, look, every case stands on its own merit, right? So if a woman decided that she didn't want to talk to me or whatever to the system, I can take the number of the car.
Okay.
And I can follow that up later on.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I can follow it up at the address that's given or whatever it is. It all depends there's no way that most guards, and I say most guards, are going to cause a problem. I've had women crying on the side of the road because their mother had died and they had done something stupid on the road, as they had gone through a traffic light or whatever it was. And, you know, that's where discretion of the guard comes in. Right, the guard turns around and makes a judgment call and he says, I believe you. You know, I think you should take a few minutes before you drive off again. Relax and calm yourself down. And, you know, you won't be hearing from me.
Yeah, and we heard some incredible stories about Gardaí and the help they were giving people during the pandemic at checkpoints where people were distressed or whatever. And we had a number of calls they were on air about the actions of Gardaí. Stay there, Eugene, please. Eugene, John O'Reilly, Ruth Walsh is still there. Annette, good afternoon. A few weeks ago, what happened?
Good afternoon, Joe. Hi. I was walking home. It was just after 10 o'clock and it was very warm. But it was in my neighbourhood and I was saying to your researcher there that I was doing something that I don't usually do. I was looking at my phone. Now, I had the earphones in. I was listening to, I know it was the 10 o'clock news had come on BBC Radio 4.
Okay.
And but I was looking at my phone. As I say, I'd be conscious of not doing that, especially when I had earphones in.
Okay.
But when I looked up, I was caught under branch, you know, low overhanging branches and of a tree. And I looked up and there was this guy standing there. He was dressed all in black, but he had his hood up. Now, it was a warm night. He had his hood up and he had a mask on.
Okay.
And he had a backpack as well that I saw when he went by me.
Right.
But we stood there and locked eyes for a few moments. And then he walked by me, and as he did, he whacked me on the rear, on the buttocks.
My God.
On the right buttocks. And I was really taken aback by this. And
that's assault.
But I thought, is that just a minor thing? And I thought, no, this is not right.
Assault, Joe. That's an assault.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a guard.
Yeah, that's Eugene.
Well, yeah, but I thought that just, and then I decided, I had my phone trying to say, well, I'd ring the guards, and you know, my innards were shaking, and but I went after him.
Okay.
And it was his nonchalance about the whole thing. You know, he went by me so casually and whacked me sort of in an entitled way, and didn't look back. But only when he sensed that I was following him did he look back, and then he ran. And as I was saying to your researcher, he seemed to know the area. He ran around a corner, and I couldn't follow, you know, as quickly as he was running. But he doubled back, I realised, because I saw him walking behind the trees in a grassy area that would lead back out onto my road. And so I came back the way that I had gone, and he came through the gap in the trees and was ahead of me. And he turned to the right and saw me, and then he went down what we would call the glen, so he was out of sight. So to me, he had reconnoitred the area, or he was very familiar with it. But I called the guards, and now I was thinking, is this going to be wasting the guards' time? They're going to think this is very minor. But what I was
that's a 999 call, Joe.
Well, it's good.
Member of the public needing assistance straight away. And it's very important to get the likes of that fella, because that's his first act. The next time, he'll go further.
Oh, good point.
Exactly. All of that was rushing through my head guard. And in fairness to the two guards that came, one of them was silent for a lot of the interview. And then the other guy said, you know, this kind of thing can escalate, and stopped, or a woman had stopped to see if I was okay. She was just, because I was waiting for the guards, and I got chatting to her, and then she insisted on staying with me. Then another woman came, and she went back home. She didn't continue on our walk, and I was conscious of not frightening women, because I wouldn't want women, especially in their own neighbourhood, not to feel that they couldn't walk the streets.
Yeah.
But I stopped another younger woman. And she was walking dogs, and I said it to her, and she seemed quite determined, which I was glad of. So, you know, I don't think the way I felt was nothing was going to stop her from walking.
The dog will help, by the way.
Exactly, that's what I said to her. Yeah, but it would be a terrible thing that a woman would have to have a dog in order to protect herself. But I have to say, you know, even I'm 60, but even so, walking on my road, if I find myself there walking at night, I'm thinking to myself, is this irresponsible? And I'm looking around. And that's what's very troubling.
Okay.
That women would start thinking like that.
Okay. I want to let Lucy in. I appreciate it. Lucy, what happened in your case?
Yeah, hi, Joe. So I was working in a nightclub at the time, and we had held a retirement party for a Garda. And one of the younger Garda, I was working on the cash desk,
okay.
And one of the younger Garda had come out and chatted to me, and all night was in and out.
Okay.
And he was quite flirty, and the more drink he got into him, kind of the braver he got. And he came up to me at one point and he said, can I have your number? And I said, no, I'm sorry. And there was no encouragement on my side whatsoever. He said, no, I'm sorry. I said, I have a boyfriend. I really, like, I'm not going to give you my number. And he was like, all right, well, he goes, well, all I have to do is go out and follow you to your car and I can get your registration plate and I can get your number. And I was really, like, I was really put off by it. I was like, oh my God, this is just, like, uncalled for. And I said, listen, I said, if you keep that up now, I said, I'm going to report you.
Yeah,
he went back into the nightclub and brought out an older gentleman who was off. It was all guards. There was no one else in the nightclub at this stage apart from the guards because we hadn't officially opened yet. It was before we'd opened. Mm-hmm. He went back in and pulled out an older gentleman and came out and goes, well, this is my sergeant. What do you want to report?
Awful, awful, awful.
And
stuff.
I to be honest, I kind of was terrified at that stage because I was like, if he is this brazen to go in and actually get his sergeant and say that one of the girls out there is giving out about him and bring him back out.
Well, I know, I actually
got a bouncer to walk me to my car that night because I was that afraid.
Well done. And as I can hear Eugene in the background there, as per usual, condemning that, and as he had earlier in a different case, and urging people to contact superiors. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We are hitting the 100th episode of The Meaning of Life, started by Gay so many years ago. It's the 100th episode on a Sunday night, 10:30, RT television. And the special guest is the English actor and award-winning author, Rupert Everett. I hope you can join us then. Today's producer was a series producer, Rebecca Meehan, sound Liam Mullen, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.